Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's the Soul Control Podcast. I have so much reverb now, I don't have it. It sounds cool, I sound like I'm important. Aubrey Marcus is so fucking sweet. He started on it, and he writes lots of books, and he does programs on the internet to make you a better person. And he's real buff, and he has a hot girlfriend, and that's really rad.
Woo! Susan going live.
No, let's go ahead and just keep the
keep the reverb going
the whole time.
That's hysterical.
One and only Swole Patrol podcast, the comprehensive health and fitness podcast, including not only the body, but the mind and the spirit. Our guest today is an author. He is a modern day poet, a warrior all at once. He is the founder, most notably known as the founder of a fantastic company known as Onnit, and I'm talking about the one and only Aubrey Marcus. How are you, man?
I'm great. All is well.
It's been a long time coming. I'm really, really glad we had a chance to talk to you, though.
Yeah, I'm stoked we got to make this happen.
Real quickly, give us a background on how Onnit became a thing, because you know a company geared at total human optimization doesn't exactly sound like your run-of-the-mill thing. And you were a very young man when it got started. How did that all come about?
Well, yeah, I mean, not that young. I was 31, and it feels like a long time coming. You know, I mean, by that point, I was really pretty frustrated that I hadn't been able to create something that I really felt like was in my heart and soul until that point. But I, you know, now looking back, I realized I just wasn't ready to be the type of person that could build this company. So I'm glad that it, in my mind, took as long as it did. But really, it started with one really good idea, and that was to create a cognitive enhancing supplement that you could actually feel, something that, you know, wasn't just 90% imagination that you hoped it was good for you, but something that had a noticeable impact, but was derived from natural components. And that was really something that the market hadn't seen. And we started with that, but it was always an understanding that you can't just create a supplement and take a pill and have all of the functionality and performance that you're looking for, that the whole body, mind, and spirit works together in unison. So we had to support all the different systems. But it started with that one good idea with Alpha Brain.
And you have an idea. You say, look, I'm going to make something that's going to be effective as a, you know, with your neurotransmitters. It's going to be a cognitive enhancer. But you're not a scientist. I mean, where does that go from there? It's just a good idea. How does that not seem intimidating and daunting to then actually make a product that works?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to know that you're not going to rely entirely on yourself. You know, I had access to great doctors and great scientists and a whole body of literature that was available on PubMed to help form this initial formula. So it's really just leveraging the resources around you to solve a big puzzle, you know, and that's really, I think one of my main strengths is just solving puzzles, and you use all the pieces that you have available. And, you know, fortunately there's, with all the research that existed and with all the resources that I had available from the athletes and doctors and the scientists and the researchers already at my disposal from various connections that I'd already made into pro sports and into the medical field, you know, we were able to put together a pretty solid first run at this, and then ultimately back it up with those two double blind clinical trials at the Boston Center for Memory to really validate that not only did we think it was working, but that it actually was compared to placebo.
And I mean, the company's spawned on to become something that's really, really quite remarkable with all the different nutritional supplements and the foods and not and the Onnit Academy and the actual physical brick and mortar Onnit Academy in Austin. Mm-hmm. It's really something that you should be very proud of, and it's more than just a feather in your cap.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I really feel like I'm living the dream. You know, I walk into work and it's my version of paradise, you know, to a great degree. So it doesn't mean that, you know, paradise doesn't go to hell every once in a while.
Sure.
And it's really stressful and challenging at times, but overall, you know, I'm truly living my dream and super grateful to be able to do it.
Now, the book Own the Day, Own Your Life, Optimize Practices for Walking, Working, Learning, Eating, Training, Playing, Sleeping, and Sex. I've bought the book. I've read it. And one of the things that I took away from it that, you know, to me, it really hit home was the idea that let me get the notes here. The wide peripheral gaze. It was something that really, I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks. It's not something that I can say I've mastered or that I fully understand. What is your, you know, give us a short synopsis of the wide peripheral gaze.
Yeah, really there's a couple different thoughts with meditation, and that's, you know, really a form of mindfulness. It's a way to get out of the thought patterns of your brain and into, you know, some slower, deeper cycles or even, you know, stillness, which is really the goal. And I think there's two ways to go about that. One is you focus on some one thing very intently, and that could either be your breath, or that could be a chant, you know, or that could be you know, there's a variety of different methods. You can focus on a dot. You can focus on the open space behind your eyes, which is called open focus meditation, all these different techniques. Well, the Native American trained tracker, Tom Brown, talks about a technique where you don't focus on one thing. You really focus on everything. And in doing so, it almost overloads your senses with so much information that there really isn't room to think about anything else. Like all of those bits of information coming from all the pixels that are now available to you as you stop focusing on one thing, but allow yourself to open your gaze to the widest possible point. It's like the opposite of sensory deprivation, which is another way to get to stillness. It's sensory overload. And in sensory overload, you can also find that really deep sense of stillness. And the value of it is that you can really do it anywhere. And so it's a very practical, kind of pragmatic way to practice mindfulness, where you just, you know, open your gaze to the widest possible point, take in as much visual information as you possibly can, mm-hmm. and combine that with some deep breathing. And it's really quick and effective. You don't need a meditation cushion and the perfect incense to really reach a state of stillness.
It's awesome. It's awesome, man. I love it. Were you always this kind of open-minded, very kind of intellectually curious person, even as a little kid? I mean, it's really the scope of the stuff that you're into is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was always curious, I would say, you know, but I was also a little bit more probably opinionated and a little less open-minded. You know, I was a pretty staunch atheist until I took my first dose of psilocybin on a vision quest out in the mountains and realized, like, oh shit, I got some things wrong. You know, so I mean, there's always points where I realize how foolish I'd been in the past, but you know, I continue to try and just learn and adapt and make friends with what I don't know.
You got into drugs, and one of the drugs that I have been touting for a long time, and you're going to be surprised here, Dr. Drew has been touting for a long time, mm-hmm. and no one wants to listen to us,
yep.
is the use of nicotine. Mm-hmm. And you, I know, Aubrey, you're a guy, you one of the very few people voices out there that gives the positive effects of nicotine. Talk a little bit about that, about not only, I mean, the obvious, the appetite satiation and things that people, you know, bodybuilders and stuff banty
yeah,
about.
But it could be used for people that are trying to real manage a weight problem.
Yeah, yeah,
it could
yeah.
really be good.
You, I know you're getting into the snus and stuff. Like, is there cognitive enhancement there too?
Oh,
1,000%.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it really yeah. helps you drop into a really deep focus. And you see why ball players and pitchers and elite operators in the military, you know, choose nicotine, you know, as a really viable option, because it's unlike a lot of the other focus cognitive enhancers you'll find, because it really seems to quiet everything else around and allow you to really hone in on what you're targeting. And it's a really highly pleasurable experience. And I think people have been scared because there is no doubt about it that cigarettes will fucking kill you.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't avoid that fact, but there's way better ways to get nicotine in your body. And it's just about risk management.
I mean, it's bizarre to me that people confuse nicotine and tobacco. They overlap, but they're independent phenomena.
Mm-hmm. What's the go-to for you, Aubrey? Is it the snus?
Go-to for me is the snooze. Yeah. I mean, I'll enjoy a cigar, but that's like, that's what's really snooze? For the process of it and the ritual of it. It's not the most effective way for me to get the nicotine. I use a really high strength snooze. So, you know, it minimizes the amount of time that the packet is in contact with my gums and I can really get the nicotine into my system and then just modulate how much I put it in. And it seems, you know, I don't do it every single day, but I'll do it a couple times a week. And it's just a great ally for me to have. And just being mindful that the nicotine isn't controlling me. And then I think I'm in control of the habit, but really it's in control of my decisions.
Do you crave it? Do you crave it afterwards?
I don't, no. Honestly, good. You know, and it's, I think that's, I don't have a very addictive personality, but I could see where nicotine could be kind of grabby. You know, mm-hmm. It's something that's pretty pleasurable and something that you could get used to for sure. But I think it's just having the discipline to know that, all right, you're playing with something that does have a little stickiness when it comes to addiction, does have some potential risks. So just be mindful. You know, this isn't, you're not playing with the Teletubby here. You know, there's some sharp edges to this thing, but nonetheless, it can be an incredible tool whose benefit outweighs the risk.
And the snooze, Drew, that's the little packets, right? You
got it.
Pop them in your mouth.
I don't really know what they are, but I've heard you talk about them.
It's very gangster. I feel like you use snooze, you feel like a tough guy from 1885 or something.
Very gangster.
It's like Gangs of New York all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very awesome.
Throwing hatchets and spitting wads. Yep.
I notice, you know, I'm a big admirer of you, and I follow you on Instagram. I check out all the things that you're doing, and you know, I love a lot of different Onnit products. I know it's your guy. Look, you'll dabble in some jujitsu here and there, some yoga on a Sunday. Then it's off to throwing axes and walking on one of those balance wires, whatever it may be, doing the functional workouts. And all of that is great. And especially a guy like you who does it at a high level. Do you ever fear or do you ever think with other people that there's the risk of getting involved in too many things and then you can lose focus on maybe getting better at one or two?
Yeah, that's like the story of my life,
yeah.
I think. But I think my specialty is finding the overlap points, those parts of the Venn diagram where multiple different things meet. You know, I'm not a laser, I'm a lantern, you know, and I'm drawing connections from multiple different sources. So for me, it's worked out. You know, there's always going to be someone better than me at any single thing. But are they going to be better than me at 5 things, at 10 things? Probably not, you know, and that's really kind of where I've put my attention is to be really proficient in a lot of different fields. So I could relate with a lot of different people and I could draw the connections and fill in the gaps between those fields and then just rely on the experts for their expertise.
I notice a common thread, not only in your book, but in the Go for the Win program that, you know, finding your passion and using that as your ally to kind of guide you in your life. Obviously it's a beautiful thing if the two can coincide and they can work well. Is it hard sometimes though, and can it be dangerous though, if let's say I'm 5'10" and I'm uncoordinated and my passion is to be in the NBA, you know what I'm saying? Like where do you draw that line where you're chasing a pipe dream or you're just blindly following your passion?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to recognize what you're really here to do, you know, like what is your purpose? Like what is going to be the greatest fulfillment of who you are? And I think for a while, like I got sidetracked training for an MMA fight, you know, and that was really, and I was doing some heavy sparring and getting my ass kicked regularly. And was that really me doing what I was supposed to do? No, I was me chasing a weird rabbit for my ego's sake to try and prove to myself that I was tough or whatever I needed to prove to myself at that different point. So it was good for me to hang up the gloves and stop taking the concussive brain trauma from doing that. And I think you have to recognize all those points when you're like, why am I doing this? Am I sleeping with too many women for the validation? Am I training MMA just so I can prove something to myself that I don't really need? Am I tracking down this, you know, career because I think it would be cool to be an entrepreneur? You know, you have to figure out why you're doing it and then be really brutally honest with the self-reflection.
I'm glad you brought up sleeping with too many women. And not because of the boneheaded kind of locker room talk, but one of the things that you mentioned in the book is toxic sex. And it's something that I immediately related to on a visceral sense, but I didn't quite intellectually understand it. What do you mean when you're talking about toxic sex?
Well, it could be a variety of different things, you know, but I think it goes back to the, really goes back to the why, you know, why are you doing this? Like, what is the purpose? Is it to really enjoy the experience, or is this because you don't feel worthy of love and you don't feel like a man unless you're sleeping with a variety of different females or certain type of females and you need that, you know, that's the stuff that you got to illuminate, because you'll be chasing those dragons down forever and they will never give you fulfillment if you're trying to fulfill your internal sense of worth externally, and whether that's in the bedroom or in the weight room, it doesn't fucking matter. Right. Like, you got to find that stuff inside, not find that stuff outside.
I would argue that it's more than just worth, it's also regulation, right? Feeling okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a bigger landscape. Worth, sure, is part of it, but regulating.
I will say, the lion's share of sex that I had in my life definitely made me feel not okay.
But it was an attempt to feel okay.
Yeah.
A lot of the drug using also made you not okay, but it was an attempt to be okay.
No, but while I was high, I was okay.
Right. And sometimes when you're engaged with the sex, sometimes it's okay. And afterwards, not okay.
Aubrey, I've been sober about 17 years. I really feel like I missed the boat in that I chose all these horrible narcotics. I never once did any of like the DMT or anything that I could go on like a vision quest with. I did
no hallucinogenics.
No,
you did MDMA all the time.
I did LSD, but I would eat sheets of acid. Okay. Like there was no self discovery into lying in a bathtub in Las Vegas pissing myself.
It was
you know what I'm saying?
Standing in a mirror screaming.
Yeah, cutting myself in Amsterdam. There was no self discovery. A guy who's, I mean, you've traveled the world with shamans and medicine men and women, and you really, really put yourself out there in the world of kind of plant based medicines. Talk a little bit about that. You give us kind of like the Reader's Digest version of some of these plant based medicines. And from what I understand from guys like you, guys like Joe Rogan, guys like Dorian Yates, everyone I hear and I talk to, guys in my personal life, none of them, and this, I can't say this for any other drug, none of them come back with these negative stories. They all say that they have more appreciation for the world around them and more compassion. Is that, you know, has that been your experience?
Yeah, undeniably. You know, I wouldn't be where I am, who I am, or, you know, speaking the way I am or understanding the world the way I do without the help of these plants. You know, I owe a lot to them, and it's, you know, but it's not the path for everybody. You know, I think this is, it's not a panacea. It's not going to fix everything. You have to do a lot of work. And a lot of times these journeys are incredibly uncomfortable. You know, they'll put you in confrontation with your greatest fears. You know, I remember the first time I did the plant medicine ayahuasca, which is a combination of a couple different vines and leaves from South America. I was taking it in Peru at the time. It's a very old traditional sacrament. I remember the first time I took it, and it's DMT containing. So DMT is the active psychedelic in the brew. The first time I took it, it was just about 3 hours of envisioning the many ways that I could die. And there was spiders crawling in my eyes and exploding in my brain and eels eating my insides. And I was sliding down a vine of thorns naked and combusting in a variety of different ways. And then eventually it found my greatest fear, which was the fear of dying of cancer, like a long, slow, protracted death. And it, you know, in the hallucinogenic state, convinced me that that was happening right now. And it forced me to confront and ultimately overcome and accept my fear of death. And since then, you know, it's been a massive boon in helping me alleviate these fears and the fear of death. But going through the process was hellish. And, you know, I could elucidate and enumerate countless other times where the experience is really challenging and difficult, but the result is incredibly powerfully positive.
It's, you know, pretty clear that hallucinogenics should be used in end-of-life stuff, end-of-life treatments.
Yeah.
It's very clear.
And they're starting to use them therapeutically in other capacities.
Yeah, but the end-of-life thing is like crystal clear. It should be available. And how to use it, when to use it, and what to, that's got to get worked out yet. But clearly it works for coming to terms with hopeless situations.
Yeah, they've concluded those phase 2 trials conducted by Hefter that show pretty unequivocally that it helps with anxiety and depression and end-of-life care. Mm-hmm. And really, really powerful for that.
And then you're thinking of also PTSD, also interpersonal discord, insights, you know, the guided psychotherapeutic experiences.
Right, right.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really just about going in with the right intention, with the right medicine, at the right dose, in the right setting, and the right provider. Like all of that, if when all of that lines up and you're in the right, it's in, you're in the right position, it can be incredibly beneficial. It's not a guarantee though.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, there are people who do have tough experiences that left them worse than when they
right.
started.
That's the ethical issue from the standpoint of medicine, which is all those right things have to be specifically defined so we can try to drop into the right thing as much as possible and then understand the risks. Mm-hmm. We don't have that yet. But that's why it's not widely used yet.
And fortunately, though, it's only been recently that the FDA has opened up the ability for labs to test this.
Still, they're being weird about it, but it'll get more widespread soon, no doubt.
Yeah, and the data will tell the story.
Yeah.
And that's the beautiful thing about the scientific method. This is no longer anecdotes and conjecture anymore. This is now hard clinical science. So I'm really excited about this new era that we're entering into, where it's not about trip reports and stories anymore. It's about what are the clinical trials showing.
Take us through I'm talking to Aubrey Marcus, founder and CEO of Onnit. Take us through like a typical Aubrey Marcus day, diet-wise, training-wise, because you are, as you pointed out, obviously, you know, living the dream doesn't come without its flaws, but you are a man who's living the dream. You got the beautiful life. You got the beautiful company. Everything seems to be going well. You're a smart guy, and you're also shredded to the bone, got the beautiful girlfriend, you know, the whole deal. So are you a keto guy lifting heavy weights, or is this kettlebells and a lot of veganism? What's a typical day in the life of Aubrey when it comes to the training and diet?
Yeah, typically the earlier parts of the day, pretty keto, but a modified higher protein keto. Mm-hmm. So not like the traditional medical definition of ketogenic diet, where it's like 90% fat or over 80% fat, but more of a very low carb diet with a lot, very micronutrient rich, and drink a lot of green juices, try to have a real diversity of nutrients and food sources that I bring in, but keep it extremely low carb throughout the day, because I've noticed that when I start playing that game of metabolic ping pong, where I allow my blood sugar to spike and then insulin to dump into my body and then blood sugar to crater, it's just exhausting. And I end up wavering from periods of a little bit of energy to fatigue, to energy to fatigue. And I want to kind of maintain a steady, like solid productivity and mental alertness throughout the day. And so eliminating the carbohydrates through the day really helps with that. And then I get my training in typically around 4 to 6, somewhere around there. And that could be really anything. Some days it's sprinting. Some days it's playing hoop. Some days it's, you know, some kind of martial arts. Some days it's lifting heavy. Like today I was out with Kyle Kingsbury and we were squatting and pressing heavy.
Oh, nice.
But it can really be anything. Some days I'll just swim a bunch of laps. Some days I'll do yoga. But I'm almost always doing something. And I also don't look at working out as like only the time I spend there in the gym. I'll typically hit the gym at some point during the day, but I'm also just trying to move around. I got a trampoline in my office. I'll hit that for 10 minutes. You know, I'll do some push-ups or some movements or some stretches and try to just keep my body in motion to a certain degree, and then occasionally stress it really hard by doing some kind of sprint or doing something that really pushes myself, something moving some heavy weight.
I could not be like that.
Really?
No. And even though I like working out every day, my body would not tolerate that.
Why? Because you need the regimen of like
it needs.
Yeah,
to,
I need to do what you got to do. And
yeah,
that's it.
Because I lose it very, very so quickly. So like particularly like lifting a heavy weight or even a high intensity. I'm good for if I do it all the time. And that gene testing I had bore that out.
Yeah,
he actually said that to me without knowing anything about what I was doing. And I was like, yeah, that's it. He said, you should work out 7 days a week because you will lose it very, very quickly. And I thought, yeah, that's in fact the case. And it's particularly the idea of what Aubrey's doing in terms of, you know, doing high intensity and then lifting heavy. Can't do it. Could not switch back and forth.
Isn't that also because you're 104 years old? I mean, doesn't that happen?
No, I've always been that way. When I was 24 and really lifting very heavy, it was the same exact thing.
Okay. All right. Which is weird. Sure.
But I do experience the dietary experiences the way he does.
Yeah.
That I fully
about
understand.
What is it, about 2 months now that we've gotten Dr. Drew to finally listen?
Yes, and I've gone on like carnivore.
Yeah, he's been eating
oh, wow.
And I haven't felt this good in 20 years.
That's awesome.
I'm not kidding.
That's awesome.
I am not kidding. Although I've sort of broadened it out a little bit, but the closer I stick to carnivore, the better I feel. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, I feel that too. Digestive distress is eliminated to a great degree as well.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a lot of my vegetable and greens in from pressed green juices, which actually makes it even easier on the digestion. So if I can stick with that, I'm really streamlined. And I'll add in a lot of nights, not every night, but I'll add in some carbohydrates at dinner. I find that I sleep better. And it's I almost enjoy the narcotic effect of carbohydrates at night when I really just want to relax and I don't need to focus and I want to watch a movie and crash out to bed.
I'll try my best. I'll go the whole day eating like an absolute caveman, and I will stare at the ceiling and I tell myself, well, I'm not going to go eat food. I'm not going to. And then as the time ticks on, I was like, screw it. And I'll go in the kitchen and crush some rice. And next thing I'm KO'd. I'm out. Something about it just it really does.
I get none of that.
Really?
None of that.
Oh,
yeah.
You're an unlucky man.
Yeah.
A lot of amazing products at On, and I'm not just saying that to blow smoke, but I'm a big proponent of Alpha Brain.
I like your MCT oil too.
Yeah, the MCT oil is great.
And I like those crazy kettlebells with the gorilla faces. I love
those. Drew's swinging them all the time. I'm also a big fan of Hemp Force, and I was wondering how, if at all, this is a total like a layman's question, but how has the relaxed stance on marijuana, the actual, you know, with the THC, how has that in any way changed your harvesting and use of hemp seeds in any way? Because I know America's weird about the whole plant of cannabis. Have you found it any easier, or has it become any easier over the years?
Not really. You know, there's still not large-scale hemp seed production going on in the U.S. I mean, there's small farms in Colorado and small farms kind of popping up that are providing it, but we're still getting the majority of our hemp from Canada, where they have been less weird and have much more mature crops and aren't worried about stuff going on. I just got a notification yesterday that the Senate is trying to pass some new farm bill that's going to create even more regulation on hemp and hemp products, including CBD, hemp seeds, and of course, THC-producing flower as well. But it's just crazy. Like, it's over, guys. Stop fighting.
Yeah.
Like, it's over. You lost. You know, it's like, let it be.
Have you also found, I mean, the supplement industry is a shady industry, to say the least. You know, I've been dabbling in strength training and bodybuilding and all that bullshit for 20 years now. And it is rife with snake oil salesmen and shysters. Have you found it difficult? Has it ever been alluring to have the quote-unquote proprietary blends and all the other nonsense that a lot of companies fall into? Because it is easy. It's very easy to just make money selling shit.
It depends on how you define easy, right?
Yeah.
Like, is it easy on your soul and your psyche?
No, it's a good point.
And, and can you actually feel like you deserve what you're earning, or will you self-destruct either internally or externally because you know that you've been fucking people the whole time and cheating people? And I don't think you get the shortcut out. I mean, you really have to be a sociopath if your goal is to make money taking advantage of other people, because we're really good arbiters of our own justice. And when we know that we're perpetrating injustice, we'll bring a reckoning upon ourselves. And you see that over and over again with people who've done stuff the wrong way. So it's really not a hard choice for me. I just understand that if I don't do it the right way, I'm going to feel horrible, right? And I'm going to punish myself in some way, shape, or form. So I'm not going to enjoy whatever thing that I think I won.
What's coming down the pike? Do you guys have anything exciting you're working on? Can you talk about it?
Tons of stuff. I'm really excited about our protein bars that we're coming out with. They're super low carb, and they're based on a 60 different plant ingredient combination. So it really optimizing this kind of micronutrient profile. I mean, most people won't have 60 different nutrients in their whole life, you know, and now we're getting it in each different individual bar.
It's hard to get the low carb too. That's good. It's great.
Yeah, super good. It's like three to 5 grams of sugar per bar, and very low carb, everything, all low net carb as well. So really a really clean bar, and I'm excited about that coming. We got some interesting stuff. We're just having cool meetings. We're going into like a real exciting product development life cycle, and I probably can't can or shouldn't talk about too much more, but
sure.
Give us a lot of cool stuff coming up.
Hint, what kind of area are you looking at?
Well, there's a couple areas in food that I think really trying to imagine these things that we've stopped eating because it's just not possible if you're trying to stay away from sugar, you know, and then say, what if we did it a different way with different constituents and using stevia and monk fruit and erythritol and xylitol, like, and that's already started. It's not like we're starting that trend, but I think we have some ideas to extend that trend into some different fields. So that's exciting.
God, I should put you in touch. I've got a friend that makes these great protein cookies using all those sorts of sweeteners and things, and just they're fantastic. And they are really
it's awesome.
You can make some amazing protein products.
Have you had the
amazing shit?
Yeah, anything that you love. The On It protein bites, like little.
No.
Oh, dude. Oh,
okay, I'm in.
Those are the gangbangers.
I'm in.
That's the G shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that you love and have loved since you were a kid, there's a way to remake that.
Yep.
In a healthy way.
Yep.
And it just hasn't been done yet.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're taking a look at that. That's pretty interesting. And then I'm really curious about the best way to utilize exogenous ketones. And that's also a field that's been explored a bit, but you know, so we're taking our time with that and making sure that we're really careful with the line that we end up coming out with. If we end up coming out with something that we're really happy with, but I've experimented with a variety of different things and I've found some pretty good success. So that's something I'm excited about. There's, you know, a couple different things that are really interesting to me at this point.
Have you ever gone far in on development and gotten excited about a product at Onnit and it ended up not panning out?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've produced products that, you know, and by didn't pan out, I mean, didn't sell well.
Right. Know? No, I meant more so that like you had a really good idea. Maybe you were getting into
didn't take it to market because it wasn't, turn out to be what you thought it was.
You know, you do so much research that usually, you know, some of these ideas get killed like pretty early on. I don't think there's anything that we've gone all the way. I mean, there's one product that I was working on, a fulvic mineral supplement. And, you know, fulvic acid is great for mineral absorption and has shown some benefits to testosterone production, has a great micronutrient rich profile. And I was enjoying using it. And we took it right to the final stage where we'd flavored it and everything was looked lined up to be like a really solid product. And then they did stability testing right at the last minute and decided that they needed to add citric acid, like a lot of citric acid, to keep it shelf stable. And it just destroyed the flavor. And we'd already produced the batch. And so now we just came out with this fucking shit sandwich flavored fulvic minerals. And it is still effective, but it was so painful to drink. I just ended up discontinuing the product. I was like, what are we doing here?
Right.
You know, this is horrible. I detest doing this every day. Like nobody else wants to do it. It's not like I'm taking some, you know, something that's so incredible that it's worth the punishment of the flavor.
I think there's
been some times like that.
I noticed, I'm not sure, you guys don't have a pre or probiotics, do you?
Yeah,
we have our total gut health.
Oh, tell us about that. Man, I'm not aware of this. Tell that.
So it's a combination of betaine HCL. So increasing the hydrochloric acid, has our digestive enzyme blend, has a 5-strain probiotic, which is some of the familiar things you'll see. And then an additional Saccharomyces boulardii, which is actually helps your microbiome, which is your fungal microbiome in your stomach as well. And also some prebiotics that come from dandelion root and dandelion leaf. And so put that all together in a gut pack, something you can take with you, rip open, eat with a meal, and really helps not only get the probiotics in there, but also helps you digest your food a little better.
And I was, you know, linking back to, you know, Go for the Win and reading the book, I was thinking to myself of how many times I've flat out been intimidated. I might have a great idea. I might have a passion. I might find something that I think is my quote-unquote purpose. And I was scared. I was just frankly intimidated. I thought that was too much for me to bite off. And looking at a guy like you who seemingly is – scared of nothing, has conquered everything that's gotten his way. Was there ever times where you did feel that way? Did you think that Onnit was not a reality that could be brought to fruition? I mean, were you ever just staring at something that you thought was just too daunting to follow through with?
I mean, I was terrified that Onnit was going to fail for like the first 4 years straight. You know, every day I would look at it like, this is too good to be true. What's going to happen? Who's going to, you know, what regulatory you know, thing is going to come in, what lawsuit's going to happen, what mistake are we going to make, you know, what. And I think, you know, just you just kind of, you know, sack up and start going, and the fear slowly gets replaced with experience and a kind of a quiet self-confidence that comes from just having been there in the battles and taking your wins and taking your losses. And I think that's really what happened. But certainly this isn't a story of fearlessness. This is a story of, you know, just enough courage to get it over the line and then, you know, doing your best to manage those emotions as they come up.
Do you think everyone has that in them and they suppress it, or there's haves and have nots? I mean, because a lot of people like to pass off, oh, that guy's just a lazy piece of shit, or that guy, you know, he's just never going to follow through with anything. But there's a million factors that go into someone becoming the person that they are. Do you think that really anyone, if they found it within themselves, has that warrior spirit?
I do. I mean, I don't think the species would have survived if that wasn't really in us, you know. Yeah. And I think human beings share a lot more in common than we give credit. But I think habituation, pattern, and momentum is a huge thing. You know, I think rather than this being an innate characteristic, I think this is based upon small choices that you've made over time. And we're so, so dependent on this early momentum. So did you, you know, accept the challenges that came to you early and fight to overcome them, however small they were? Or did someone, you know, shield you from those? Or were you told that you were incapable and incompetent and believed that story early on and cowed from those challenges and shrugged responsibility in all of these small little battles? You know, and that's really what ends up creating the full grown adult human. And it's even harder to change course when you have this mountain of momentum against you. Now, it's certainly possible, and anybody can decide at any point to forgive their past and start off on a new track. But I think really this is a story of momentum, not innate capability or an innate set of characteristics.
You know, we used to be a country, I think, of human optimization. I don't think we really create that now. There was just an article today that came out and said IQ is dropping in this country, and they go, oh, it must be the fluoride exposure in pregnancy. I'm like, no, we are not optimizing people. We're not giving them what they need to optimize, and it's being reflected in our cognition.
Do you think it's that, or do you think it's the fact that we work more than ever and get more less time to be ourselves than ever?
I don't think we work more than ever. I think we fuck off more than ever. You know, I think we're really on the phone, on TV, distracted. You know, all of these things are very short thought loops. You know, they require very little thinking, very little deep brain activity.
Right.
They're just kind of jumping from one thing to the other. So when you're required to really sit and think and focus about something, you haven't flexed that muscle. I mean, you're just used to this perpetual distraction.
Right. Yeah. Think of people. Everyone has the Dunning-Kruger problem now. Everyone thinks they know everything, and they actually know nothing. They just have access to information. And so I've noticed with the millennials, they really believe they're experts in everything, and they don't know anything. And think about the difference between looking something up and having to read and research what there is about a topic and then present it to somebody else in writing or speech. That requires a very different brain activity than just, hey, I'm just going to look it up on this little device here. And maybe I can read what's off it and tell you for a millisecond, I'll remember it and tell you what I learned. That's different than researching, processing, analyzing, synthesizing, and then presenting. We don't do that.
But okay, well, let's take it for let's say the IQ is dropping, and the IQ is going to be dropping for even people who didn't go to college and aren't erudite. So that means a guy like me in 1940, who was the same guy who didn't go to college and isn't a learned man. What is the difference between a guy like me and a guy in 1945 and a guy like me now, if both of those dudes didn't present things and study and research and blah blah blah? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the missing factor? Is it the phone and the TV?
The phone and the TV, and they were given challenges during secondary school.
Yeah,
back then.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
I also think, look, there's no more healthy boredom.
no more healthy boredom and no more grit, no more grinding it out.
Well, that may be true, but also I remember I was at the car wash the other day. And, okay, guys, watch my car. And I'm looking at my phone, endlessly looking at my phone. And I got overwhelmed by this feeling of like, oh, my gosh, 20 years ago, I'd go to the car wash. You know what I'd do?
Sit there.
I'd go for a walk maybe. Yeah.
I'd pick up the paper. Mm-hmm. I'd just think. I'd just actually sit there and think. Well, you know what I'd do when I take a shit 20 years ago? I'd think. I would think about stuff. I would come up with ideas. I would come up with funny radio bits or something, yep. You know? Yep. You know what I do when I take a shit now? Take one guess.
Phone.
Instagram. Yeah.
But the spontaneity of being and thinking is what's missing. Yeah, that's an engine that has to be sort of muscled. It's a muscle that has to be exercised.
Yeah, I agree with that. And reading.
Reading's part of that too, yeah. And I think you're describing grit in a way, that, you know, that barreling through when you felt bad and weren't sure on your feet, and mm-hmm. then soon you were. It took going through that to get there.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Aubrey, if there's anything else you'd like to get to, believe me, I'm all ears. But I am, I'm just honored that you took the time out of your day. I know it was a hassle, and I know it's been a long time coming. It was like
no hassle.
Two or three failed tries that we couldn't get it done, but we finally got it done. And
I've been as vocal as you, but I'm a huge fan. I've always been a fan of Onnit stuff.
Yeah,
I love their stuff.
I appreciate that.
You really, what you've been able to accomplish is really admirable, and you make excellent products. I'm a big fan and a big supporter. And like I said, I picked up the book, and I can't recommend it enough. Own the day, own your life. Optimize practices for walking, working, learning, eating, training, playing, sleeping, and sex is the book. In closing, I also want to say, tell your girlfriend, she does an excellent job as a ringside reporter on Glory.
Yeah,
she really does a fantastic job. I was like, oh, here we go. Okay, I wonder how she got this gig. Jeez, I mean, and, you know, Whitney does a fantastic job. She's like a very, very competent broadcaster.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll definitely let her know. I appreciate that for sure. And we get to hang with Ellis tomorrow. He's coming out
Invitational. The Jiu-Jitsu Invitational. Yeah.
Yeah.
You made a prime choice by choosing Jason Ellis to be a color play-by-play guy.
Yeah. 100%.
Awesome, man. Well, I really do appreciate it. Thank you, dude.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
All right. See ya.
The Go for the Win course is available online. Just look up Aubrey Marcus Go for the Win. I do recommend it. Aubrey Marcus on Twitter and Instagram at Aubrey Marcus, and of course at Onnit on Twitter and Instagram for everything Onnit. He is the CEO and the founder. That was a great conversation. And thank you to everybody who tuned in, who subscribes. You make this happen, and we certainly appreciate it. And from Dr. Drew and from me, Michael D. Cathwood, thank you so much. That is the Swole Petrizole.
I want to welcome True Niagen to the show. True Niagen is a dietary supplement designed to boost a key cellular resource called NAD, also called nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. A lot of research being done on NAD, and while the science is still preliminary, I've been watching these studies for a while, and I've been really impressed. It's so exciting because these studies are showing that the increased NAD levels may potentially help with cellular metabolism, regulating circadian rhythm, and they've even hoped that this may someday slow the effects of aging. Now, while these studies are very early, the science is impressive, and the biohacking community has gotten behind this research. I've been intrigued by the possibilities surrounding NAD and the research behind True Niagen. Check it out. The research is there. The literature is quite good. Check out the website for yourself. And I even had the chance, before I brought these guys on board, to speak with the company's chief scientific advisor. In fact, I put myself on True Niagen after speaking to Dr. Charles Brenner. Great discussion. Piqued my interest further. I'm still watching this literature. Look for that interview on the Dr. Drew podcast in June. Now, to learn more about the research, science, and the True Niagen supplements, visit TrueNiagen.com. That is TrueNiagen, TrueNiagen.com. Go there today.
Hey, everybody. It is the Swole Patrol podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Catherwood. And Dr. Drew is at Dr. Drew, of course. Join the email list today. Send your questions, drdrew.com/contact. And put Swole at the top of the email so we can get your comments. And this will get you a weekly email reminder with a link to this show and all the great shows that Dr. Drew and I do, and all the shows that Dr. Drew does by himself, and of course with Adam Carolla, the great Ace Man. Please tell a friend and subscribe on iTunes. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars. And on Podbean or Google Play, all 3 help us out. We also are on YouTube/Dr. Drew, and hope you can give us all your comments, even if you're a troll and you want to destroy our feelings and our emotions. Support our sponsors and the show. Click on the banners on drdrew.com for the links for special discounts for the products Dr. Drew and I endorse 100%. Send questions and comments to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Swole Patrol Podcast, or on Twitter @Swole Patrol Pod. And be good, be swole. #Swole Patrol.